Hey, I'm Francis Lamb, and this is Splendid Table Selects, our mini-podcast on the stuff that makes us better cooks and eaters. Diana Henry has spent nearly two decades writing thoughtful, delicious, and useful recipes inspired by her travels around the world. Her latest book, her 12th, if you were counting, is called From the Oven to the Table, and it's got all the flavor Diana's fans have come to expect. But her inspiration for this book began much closer to home. Contributor Shauna Seaver spoke to Diana from the BBC in London. Have a listen.
Diana Henry, thank you so much for talking with us.
It is a pleasure.
Now, your new book, From the Oven to the Table, is home food in between two covers. It's absolutely beautiful and very crave-worthy. And it had me wondering, what do you think the primary differences are between stovetop cooking and cooking in the oven?
I started this whole oven thing when I had my first child because he cried all the time. So I always was carrying him around and I could only do things more or less with one hand. So I just thought, right, I'm just going to start doing things in the oven. And it means basically, I just think it's much less work. I often just put everything in a dish if I can. So I'll use sheet pans and I will have chicken thighs and the potatoes and whatever else I want in it all in one dish. And then I'll just stick it into my oven for 45 minutes. And what amazes me about it is, you, the cook, doesn't have to do actually very much. You just have to buy things, have ideas, put them in the oven and make sure that you take them out at the right time. And the food is completely transformed. And I've only recently begun to think that putting things in the oven isn't cheating. It's just the way, not only that I prefer to cook from Monday to Thursday when I'm more busy, but also I just love what roasting does. I love the caramelization. I love the fact that even if you've got a bag of really quite woolly tomatoes that don't have a great flavor, or the same with stone fruits like apricots, you put sugar on top of the apricots, you season and you can add spices to the tomatoes and then some fat, like usually olive oil. And you put those in the oven and miraculously the heat finds what is in there by driving off the moisture. So any sweetness, any flavour will be condensed. And so it's not a cheat's way of cooking. It's an easy way of cooking, but I think it's also a really effective way of cooking.
I love how you said in the book that when you are cooking with your oven, you feel like someone else has done the cooking for you.
I do. And I feel also, this sounds kind of religious in a way, and I don't really mean it like that, but I feel as if I'm being offered something at the end. So when I put it on the table, I don't really feel I'm not responsible for it. I feel, yes, the oven has done the work, but also it's that someone else magically, I mean, it's just the alchemy of heat, but that someone else has given us this, which is a really nice feeling in a way.
I was wondering if you came up with any basic rules for success in how we can use our ovens. Are there any tips or any bits of equipment or things that can really make us do this right?
You need to know your oven. Most domestic ovens are never hitting the heat that it says on the dial they're hitting. It's either a little bit lower or a little bit higher. And when you start using this book, I really encourage people to write notes in pen down the side of the recipes so that they can see what works with their oven. They might have to cook something a little bit longer, or they might have to put it a little lower or a little higher heat. So that's important. I use a thermometer, one of those kind of little laser guns, so I can always check what my oven temperature is. And I get my oven, I mean, I use my oven a lot because I'm testing recipes all the time, but I get it calibrated every so often. And I that's an important thing to do. Your oven being a functioning good bit of equipment is the same as having good knives. You wouldn't think that you should cook without having at least a few good knives. If you don't understand your oven, it will just frustrate you. You will always be, you know, you'll have your timings and then they just don't quite work. So knowing your oven is an important thing. But if you start to cook in it most days, I mean, that happens very quickly. You get to know how it works.
Now, you make so many connections between the style of cooking in the oven and the vibe that it can bring to the table. And I love that you put this into the book and you really make the connection. And that for both the cook and others at the table, there is a different kind of feeling about food that comes from the oven. So what do you think the oven represents in the home and in our lives?
It's funny to me that it's now in this box against the wall. I mean, that makes sense because, you know, we're not going to put it in the middle of the room, but it's quite sidelined and the hob is more a focus. But I think the oven, because it provides such this box of warmth, and it provides such kind of sustenance, especially in the UK, we love roasts and we love baked puddings. So our kind of Sunday lunch, which is quite traditional, is it will be roast chicken or roast beef or something like that. And not everybody cooks it anymore, but we cleave to this kind of idea of a roast being the absolute kind of ultimate family meal. And we like a lot of baked puddings as well. So bread and butter pudding or rice pudding, things that are also baked in the oven. So I think certainly for us, we see the oven as quite a central thing, but it's odd that it's stuck away at the side. It used to be when oven roasting wasn't oven roasting initially, it got put in a box eventually. It was done on an open hearth. But I think we see the oven as a kind of a central thing, a giving thing. And it's also it's mysterious. When you do stuff on the hob, you see it all. I mean, even if you're doing a braise and you've got it all going, you will, during that cooking, you will kind of like move the lid because you might want the juices to reduce a little bit more, or you might put the lid back on fully because you don't want them to reduce anymore. But in the oven, it does its own thing. You might open it to baste, and some of the recipes I suggest that you do baste, but mostly it's happening in there without you.
And I feel like most of the food that comes from an oven is usually abundant. We're rarely going to heat up the whole oven for a single serving of something, right? So what comes out of the oven tends to be with the intention of serving other people and bringing
it's
people
true.
Around
you,
the table.
You don't cook small meals in there, do you? Except sometimes,
no.
I mean, it's quite sad, but sometimes I will do myself a single baked potato if my children aren't there. But that's a good point as well, because it is abundant and I will usually never put it on for one thing. Say I'm doing a kind of like pan of chicken thighs and they're going to be there for 45 minutes. I will go through my fridge and I will see, are there red peppers that need used up? So then I will have them and put little tomatoes in them and anchovies and some garlic. And I will cook those at the same time. They take about the same amount of time and then they'll be used for lunch cold the next day. So it is. You have to use it quite economically. But I like that feeling as well. I like that feeling as if, oh, there's this on this shelf and this on the middle shelf and that's right on the bottom. And they're all happening at the same time. It makes me feel like, I don't know, like an old-fashioned housekeeper or something, like I'm really on top of things when in fact I'm using the oven because I'm harassed and exhausted. I need to get supper on the table quite quickly.
And, you know, now that you mention it, I realize that we both have something in common, which is that we are both madly in love with chicken thighs. So tell me about why. Oh, I know. I just love a chicken thigh.
It's my specialist subject.
Well, I will mention, since we're on this show, that if anyone remembers the great Lynn Rosetto Casper saying a chicken thigh never dies was her. One
did
of the
she
things
say that?
Bits of wisdom. She did. And I think
wow.
that's absolutely true. And I thought of that as I was going through your book. And I'd love for you to tell us why they're your favorite ingredient and why they were so wonderful that they garnered their own chapter in the book.
Well, first of all, my father is a poultry farmer, or was a poultry farmer, and we took chicken very, very seriously as we were growing up in Northern Ireland. And my father saw it as a sign of maturity once you had decided that you preferred the thigh to the breast. When you're very little, you all want the white meat. And there was such a fuss about that. And my dad would just roll his eyes. But when it got to the stage where you asked for a thigh instead, you'd really become grown up. Basically, the meat is delicious. Thigh meat is luscious. It doesn't dry out. I mean, honestly, even the worst cook would find it hard to overdo them because they shrink, but they don't ever seem to lose their moistness. And they all cook at the same time. Try, if you've got a choice, you should try and get thighs that are all the same size. I trim them a little, the skin. Don't trim too much because the skin shrinks as they're being roasted. But what you don't want is that little underneath flappy bit, which stays uncrusty and ungolden and it is a bit, it's just not very appetizing. So I do trim them. I cook them all in a layer in either I use a sheet pan or I use a shallow Dutch oven, which is about 30 centimetres across, cast iron dish. It's one of the most useful things I have in the kitchen. And you need to oil them a little bit on the top, but salting is a really important thing. So that will help to crisp the skin. And that kind of combination of crispy, salty skin and really moist, luscious meat, I think is gorgeous. And I started really using them a lot, again, when my eldest was born. And I came across this recipe by Antonio Carluccio, who's he's now passed away, unfortunately, but he's a great Italian chef here and had a wonderful restaurant. And in his book, An Invitation to Italian Cooking, there was just a dish of little baby potatoes chopped up so that they would cook at the same time as the chicken, wedges of red onion, some rosemary, whole cloves of garlic that were unpeeled, and olive oil, salt and pepper. And he just mixed all of these in. The chicken has to end up with the skin upwards and then the skin is salted. And basically you put that in, no brining, no nothing. It goes in the oven at 400 degrees Fahrenheit for 45 minutes. And you have supper. And when I cooked this for the first time, I just thought, it sounds ridiculous, but it did. I mean, I've been cooking variations of this theme now for the last 20 years, basically. And I never seemed to run out of options or ways to do them. But it started with that dish. And that's probably the dish I've cooked more than any other since my children were born. And you can have it like that, or you can, sometimes I do salsa verde with it or some kind of sauce. I think the great thing about chicken as well is it is really open to taking on all sorts of flavors or being happy with all sorts of accompaniments.
Now, you basically take us on a trip around the world as told through chicken thighs. So you mentioned this first recipe that sort of inspired this chicken thigh movement for you. But tell us about some of your other favorite recipes in this chapter, because there are so many good flavors and also some of the pantry staples that we can always have on hand to make these really special.
My favorite, and I hope that listeners will be able to find the ingredients quite easily, it's chicken and cauliflower and potatoes all baked together, but with a Calabrian pork paste called nduja. And this is something we've become very, very, very keen on in the last couple of years in the UK. One of the supermarkets started to do it, and now everybody is looking for nduja. It's strongly spicy. It's a little bit smoky in the way that chorizo is, but it's melting as well. So you just need to cook the potatoes, the chicken, the cauliflower all together in the dish or in the sheet pan with this, and baste it every so often, because as the dish cooks, the nduja partly melts and partly then goes into little nuggets of porkiness. You have to be careful when you start off that you don't keep the nduja on top or it will burn. That's one of the things you have to really think about when you're doing these chicken thigh dishes. Not only do you have to make sure that everything you're putting in will cook at the same time together, and you have maybe, if you want to bring onions in the dish, you're going to have to add those about 10 to 15 minutes before the end. But you have to make sure that things aren't going to burn. So slices of lemon, start them off underneath the chicken thighs and then hook them out a bit later on so that they can get golden on top before the cooking is finished. So with the nduja, you want to make sure the little lumps of nduja start off underneath the chicken, and then you baste with the juices as they exude them, and then you spoon some of the little chunks of nduja over towards the end of cooking time. That way they won't burn, but the whole dish is the most beautiful russet colour. And you have these little chunks of hot deliciousness along with the chicken. And chicken is a mild meat, but it's able, because of, I think, its succulents and the kind of skin that forms on the top, the crispy skin, it's able to cope very well with something as strong as nduja. And that's what I'd say about oven cooking. Well, altogether, really, or easy cooking. If you want to make your life easy, you need a well-stocked pantry. And sometimes I drive my readers here a bit mad because they'll say, oh, I don't have this and I don't have that. And it's not hard. You make one online order of things that are a bit difficult to get and have one delivery cost, and then you can have lots of things that will make life easy for you. Because if you're cooking simple food, you need big flavours. Otherwise, you're going to get bored quite quickly. So capers, I think, are a must. I always have those. Preserved lemons, different spices. In my fridge, I normally always have feta cheese. Herbs, I always have to buy anew because you can't keep those for that long. Honey, maple syrup, sherry, soy sauce, fish sauce. You know, I have those, a collection of all of those, and I keep them in different bits of my pantry so that different kind of bits of the world are all grouped together. Otherwise, I can never find anything.
Thank you so much, Diana. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
It's been lovely. Thank you.
That was Diana Henry, author of From the Oven to the Table, with our contributor, Shauna Seaver, whose brand new book is called Midwest Made, Big, Bold Baking from the Heartland. Head to splendidtable.org to find those chicken thigh recipes Diana shared with us. And I'm Francis Lamb. Thanks so much for listening.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.